Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We will have the Rob Rant coming up later this hour. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. We will get to, here in just a few minutes, a team in the NFL that I think Titans fans will have great interest in this year that may be getting a little bit too much love out there in the offseason, but we will get to that conversation here in just a few minutes. I was perusing around, looking at some draft stuff yesterday, preparing for our draft show coming up on Friday, Jake, and I came across a piece at The Athletic that had basically nothing to do with the NHL draft. But I did find it unbelievably interesting, particularly as I read it. So we have talked about the center ice position, how important that is, and how much of a direct correlation that can be to winning in the NHL. So I saw this headline at the Athletic yesterday entitled, "Which NHL Teams Need to Upgrade at Center, Ranking All 32 by Current Quality." So I was like, okay. I wonder where the Predators rank with their quality at center. You'll be shocked to discover that coming in at number one with the most center quality in the NHL is the Edmonton Oilers, who have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl as their top two centermen.
That's pretty good.
That's hard to beat. You know, I'm going through here, and I'm like, okay, so Colorado's at four, and I think they get Dallas at five. The Panthers are at eight, and they've got – Sam Bennett, they're not really factoring him in technically because he's not signed an extension yet. So I would imagine they will move up once they get Sam Bennett back in the fold down in Florida. I'm going down, you know, Minnesota's at 17. I'm like, okay, so we're now into the late teens and Predators nowhere to be found. I get down to 23, and I'm like, oh, the Utah Mammoth coming at number 23. Interesting. I'll have to get used to saying the Mammoth. But still no Predators. The Chicago Blackhawks coming in at 26th. And they basically just got Connor Bedard. I'm like, oh, okay. All righty. Finally, I get down to number 31. It's the Philadelphia Flyers. And I'm like, well, I haven't gotten to the Predators yet, which means they must be last. And they are. Nashville Predators coming in at number 32 on the rankings for The Athletic of quality at center. And here's the kind of little write-up they give. Quote, last season, Nashville's situation down the middle wasn't ideal, but it still made sense. All four of their centers fit neatly into their roles, but all four also came in on the lower end. This season, things have devolved. Ryan O'Reilly is now a high-end number two center playing on a first line, and behind him are two players who project as fourth liners, talking about Eric Halla, Colton Sissons. He said, So if you find yourself watching the Predators and wondering how a team with Philip Forsberg, Jonathan Marchessault, and Steven Stamkos can look so punchless, there's your answer, is what the write-up says. At number 32 out of 32, the Nashville Predators with their center depth. Jake, what do you make of that, and how much of that is kind of a direct reflection of where they are in the standings right now?
It's not ideal. The most important position on the ice, being the worst in the league at it, usually doesn't lead to a whole lot of success. I don't consider myself a hockey expert, but heading into last year, it seemed like Tommy Novak was the guy that they were banking on being one of their top two centers on the team and taking that next step, and now he's gone. So you're kind of in no man's land behind Ryan O'Reilly, and like the article said, Ryan O'Reilly's a good player, but is he a top-line center at this point in his career? Probably not. So I think that's why we get all the text saying that center is the biggest need, and I think Barry Trotz knows that. But as we were talking about yesterday, it's hard to find a top-line center out there because they usually don't get let go by other teams. So it's going to be a tough ask for Barry Trotz to find anybody to upgrade that position in a significant way this offseason.
Well, it's also, it goes back to how important this pick is at number five, because potentially there's one of your answers to this problem is drafting one. I mean, look, Edmonton, they're at number one. They drafted both McDavid and Draisaitl, right? You look at number three on the list, New Jersey. They drafted Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. I mean, they were both really high picks. Obviously, Colorado drafted Nathan McKinnon. They're at number four on the list. You know, the interesting one is Vegas. They got Vegas at number two on this list. And, you know, they've got Eichel, Hurdle, and Carlson. Now, Eichel they got via trade. Hurdle they got via trade. And Carlson was via expansion draft. So it's a different situation with Vegas just given when they came in the league. But they've done it a different way. Like, they basically acquired a lot of their pieces. Yeah. And so maybe that's something you could try to emulate if you're the Predators at that point. But that does kind of show you there are some different ways to do it. I would say the Vegas way is way more difficult to do. But they've done it, and they've got them at number two on this list. But the point of this is, this, as much as anything else to me, kind of highlights why they are where they are and how difficult the project is in front of Barry Trotz. Of that position is just so important. And a lot of times people want to make the comparison in hockey, and they'll make the comparison between the quarterback in the NFL and the goalie in hockey. And I think that's an extremely flawed comparison.
Yep.
The goalie is very important. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, go back and look through the last 25 years, and what you'll find is, yes, there are a lot of good goalies that have won Stanley Cups, and when you get to the playoffs, you need your goalie to play well. But what you'll also find is, man, there's a whole lot of Sidney Crosbys and those type of guys on the list down the middle who just – you got to have it. Like, you got to have really good players at center, or for the most part, you're just not going to have much of a chance to win in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if you're going – it's not a perfect comparison, obviously, but if you're going to make a comparison to quarterback, it has to be your top-line center.
Yeah.
And Barry, when he first got hired, said that is the difference between being a Stanley Cup contender and not being a Stanley Cup contender, is having an elite centerman. And the Preds don't have that right now. There's no Bedard or McDavid in this draft, but you move back three or two spots in the draft lottery, so you don't get a chance to take one of those guys right off the top. So it does become tough. You have to be a little more creative if you're going to find one of those guys. And I just don't know if there's anybody who's going to be available to you. It does feel like, whether it's in the next couple years or down the road, the Preds are going to have to be pretty bad to find one of those guys at some point, because that's just like quarterback, where the Titans, you couldn't pass up on Cam Ward, because how often do you pick at the top of the draft and get a chance to take a quarterback? I think the Preds eventually are going to have to be in that position where you're picking high, but you can get that elite center that you've been missing for years.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, there's a team in the NFL that I think people may be going a little overboard with, and I'll explain why coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, every offseason, Jake, I feel like there's a team in the NFL that gets a whole lot of love. And sometimes it's deservedly so. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes maybe it's a little overhyped. And I'm very interested to see if the team that I have in mind this year for this can actually live up to it or not. And I am talking about Mike Vrabel's beloved New England Patriots. I was looking around last night, because we've talked a lot about the AFC South and what the win totals could look like and all those things. And we don't expect the AFC South overall to be a very competitive division. Like, I'm looking on FanDuel Sportsbook, and if you wanted to take the over on the Titans at 5.5 wins, the odds are minus 130. And if you want to go under 5.5, it's plus 110, which means that basically, Vegas thinks the Titans are going to be right around the 5 or 6 win mark when you really break it down. I was looking, just for the sake of my own curiosity, at New England. And the over-under at 7.5 for them, if you go over, which means 8 wins, it's minus 160. and under 7.5 is plus 135, which means that Vegas thinks that the Patriots are going to end up right around 8 wins. You know, the jump to get to 8 wins in the NFL is really not a lot. Like, we see people do that. So I'm not sitting here saying that the Patriots in Vrabel's first year can't make a jump to 8 wins, because it's honestly, I mean, we saw it with the Titans even back 10 years ago when they were bad. Getting from 2 or 3 wins in the NFL to 8 or 9 happens more than you think, okay? So it does happen. But some of the conversation around the Patriots this offseason, like, I've seen some people thinking they're going to make the playoffs. I've seen some people thinking that, you know, Drake May is just going to go off this year. And that, I guess that's kind of where my confusion starts. I like Drake May. I think Drake May is going to end up being a pretty good quarterback and a pretty good player in the NFL. I do think there has been an overinflation of what we saw from Drake May last year. And I think we've seen that play out in the way that they view the Patriots this year. I thought Drake May last year was fine. Like, as a rookie, particularly given the lack of having basically anything around him, he was good. He was fine. I think he ended up going 3-9 as the starter, 2,276 yards, 15 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He's fine. Like, he was fine last year. But the way that some people are talking about him, and, like, the, I guess the jump that they expect him to take, I'm still looking at that roster in New England, and I know they've got Stephon Diggs, and when he's not out there on the boat, maybe he can help you significantly on the field. But I look at their offense, I'm like, man, they're still pretty light at wide receiver. You know, they've revamped their offensive line a little bit. We'll see. I just look at their skill position right now, I'm like, I still think this has a chance to be a rough-looking offense out there. And I don't know that I can just assume, like everybody else seems to be, that the Patriots are going to be in like that 9-win range competing for a playoff spot.
I do look at their schedule, and it's really easy. There's a lot of winnable games on this schedule.
Well, you got the Jets twice in there. And they have no clue what the Dolphins are going to be. Yeah.
They're playing a fourth-place schedule, so they get the Titans and the Browns, and you're playing the NFC South, which is probably the easiest division you could face on the other side. Not to say that I think they are going to be a playoff team this year, but you can see the schedule does set up favorably for them. I think a lot of this is just a lot of people just don't realize why Mike Vrabel got fired here. They only remember the playoff game against the Patriots where he outsmarted Bill Belichick with the rules and, you know, oh, he had them as the number one seed with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback, which is what everybody will say. But he also lost 18 of his last 24 games here. It was not pretty at the end. And you're right. I don't know if this Patriots roster is set up to be a playoff team this year. I think they're going to be better, but they're starting Will Campbell at left tackle. Will Campbell, I mean, at least from everything I saw, was kind of in the Peter Skoronski territory of, yeah, he might be able to play tackle, but he's probably going to be better at guard. Is he going to be able to immediately jump in and be an above-average left tackle for Drake May? I don't think that's just guaranteed.
Well, and here's the other thing. Like, look, I think Vrabel is a good coach, and I've been on record. I thought that they made a mistake here when they fired Vrabel. But, I mean, that's water under the bridge at this point. We'll see. But Vrabel also, like, he's not developed a quarterback yet, right? Like, you know, I understand he took over with the Titans, and Marcus was already 3 years deep into his career at that point. And maybe at that point it just wasn't salvageable. Like, I don't put the failure of Marcus Mariota on Vrabel.
No.
And then Tannehill comes in. You don't have to develop Tannehill. He's been in the league for that time. So you go through your run of success, and then what you have to work with after that was Malik Willis and Will Levis. So it's not like Vrabel has had, you know, some laundry list of great quarterbacks that he's had the opportunity to try to develop. So I say he hasn't developed a quarterback. Maybe it's because he's had almost no opportunity to do it based on who he's had to this point. But I also would like to see him, you know, actually do it before we just assume that it's going to happen with Drake May.
Yeah, I like Mike Vrabel, and I agree with you. I think the Titans probably shouldn't have fired him. I think he is a good coach, but I think the people are kind of jumping the shark here with this. I mean, he inherited a team that had just won a playoff game when he came to the Titans.
Correct.
And, yeah, he took them to the next step, got them to the AFC Championship game, won the division a couple of times, but this is a Patriots team that if Joe Milton hadn't beaten the Bills backups, they would have been the worst team in the NFL last year.
Correct, yeah.
That he's taking over. And they did make changes. Like, they brought in
Milton. They had a heck of an offseason.
They brought in Milton Williams and, you know, Harold Landry on the defensive line and Stephon Diggs, who I don't know how much you can expect from Stephon Diggs.
I really
don't
either.
He's coming off a torn ACL and really wasn't extremely productive his last couple of seasons. So I'm not expecting them to immediately compete with the Bills. I think Buffalo was going to run away with that division. I think they'll be better. I think they'll be a 6-7 win team. Maybe you could see them get to 8 if things go well, and especially with the schedule.
I mean, all that in the schedule, you're right. It's a great point. I mean, some of the conversation around them this offseason, I'm like, are we talking about the Patriots or are we talking about the Chiefs? Like, what's going on? Like, Drake May is going to throw for 4,500 yards this year, and it's like, well, is he?
There should be way more hype around the AFC West teams, the Broncos and the Chargers, than the Patriots, because the Broncos, Bo Nix had a better rookie season than Drake May did.
Yeah, he was good.
Got him to the playoffs, and Sean Payton is a much more proven head coach than Mike Vrabel.
That is, like, correct.
Sean Payton's won a Super Bowl. Mike Vrabel, I think, gets a lot of the hype because he's the football guy, and you get all the stories of him and, you know, all the stuff that he does in the locker room. Like, it's great. But Sean Payton is an actual head coach who's won a Super Bowl, and he's got a quarterback who just took him to the playoffs in year one. I think the hype that's going to the Patriots should be going to the Broncos, who also have one of the best defenses in football.
Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning. How we doing?
Yeah, how you doing, Robbie?
Doing good, man.
What's up, Joe? What's up, Jake from State Farm? So, yeah, how y'all doing? Hey, Robbie, I think a lot of the hype with the Patriots is a lot of it because of Josh McDaniels. He is one of the premier offensive OCs in football, and that's the perfect guy to develop Drake May and get him to be that franchise guy that they're looking for. I think that's where the hype comes from. I don't know if they'll get 8 wins this year, but Vrabel's in a better situation than probably way better situation than he was with the Titans. Because if you remember, his OC at the Titans wasn't that great. But he's got a great Super Bowl-winning OC that's working for him this year with Josh McDaniels. I don't know what Diggs is going to do. Like Jake said, he's coming off an ACL injury. They're going to probably have to show up at wide receiver room a little bit. But I think they're going to be a good team down the road. I think Drake May will be a great quarterback down the road. But, yeah, he's in a better situation than he was at the Titans because now he's got that franchise guy and the OC that can get him over the top. But, hey, man, y'all have a good day and stuff.
Thank you,
Mark.
I
just wanted to say that.
I appreciate
you. We'll see y'all later. All right.
So, I mean, I like Drake May.
Me too.
So let me make that clear. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to trash Drake May. I like him. I think he's going to end up being a good quarterback. But I think as time has gone on here, what he actually did last year has been a little overinflated with some of the conversation around the Predators.
Definitely.
The Predators, the Patriots.
The Drake May, I think he is going to be a franchise quarterback. But how many quarterbacks have we seen have a decent rookie year and then just not be able to improve on it?
Yes.
So, the expectation that he is immediately going to jump into the tier, not the tier of Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Jackson, but the next tier with Herbert and that kind of group in the AFC, Herbert, Stroud, I don't know if you can just immediately assume that. I would probably say Drake May is right around the 10th best quarterback in the AFC right now heading into the season. I don't know if he's immediately going to make a jump and be the 5th by the end of the year, which is probably what you need him to be if you're going to be a playoff team with that roster.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on this. We'll do that coming up next. Are the Patriots and Mike Vrabel getting a little bit too much hype heading into his first year. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Stephon Diggs has gotten a lot of traction in the last 24 hours or so. He's on a boat having a good time, but the question comes in as to a certain substance that people are guessing what is and isn't. Is this something that the team has to look into?
Well, it's something that we're aware of, and obviously we want to make great decisions on and off the field. And we're hoping that with our time here on the field today, and that when we don't have a script and we're on the call-up periods, that we're making great decisions. And so the message will be the same for all our players, that we're trying to make great decisions. And any conversations that I've had with Stephon will remain between him and I and the club.
Have you talked to him since the video?
I talk to our players every single day, the ones that are here and the ones that aren't.
Are you expecting him to practice today, Mike?
Not if he's not here.
So he's not here.
You guys will find out in a minute.
Man, if you could, like, just hand script, Ian, a Mike Vrabel press conference setting right there.
Oh, he's in form already.
He's in it, baby. God, I remember that a couple weeks ago.
Not if he's like, not here.
It's like, man, I miss that guy sometimes. It's good stuff there from Vrabel.
He's like, we have the plan, the offseason plan, and this is voluntary, and if the players are here, we'll coach them. It's just like,
exactly. I mean, the players are here, they will be coached.
We were very close to don't do stupid bleep that hurts the team.
Yes. Coach better, play better. I will be very fascinated to see how all that goes in year one with Mike Vrabel.
Don't do dumb that hurt the team.
There we go.
Never gets old. Skyler on the text line says, why the hell is Vrabel starting Will Campbell at left tackle? You know, we never even got to see if Skoronski could and had to watch Dennis Daly, Andre Dillard, and Jalen Duncan over there. It is a fair question.
It is a fair question because, at least as far as I've seen, they both have, in terms of NFL left tackle, they both have the T-Rex arms a little bit, which is fine. Like, you can be a very good offensive lineman with short arms, but usually that's not great to be a left tackle.
I mean, look, as the draft process went on, I think we heard a lot about Campbell, the arm length, whether or not he'd be better suited playing guard. And, you know, Vrabel talked about it. They clearly feel like he's a tackle. So we'll see, depending on who you asked in the draft process. Most thought he was a tackle, too. I do understand if you're Skyler or a Titans fan out there and is like, you never even tried Skoronski over at left tackle throughout that run where you've got all this other stuff you're throwing out there and Dennis Daly and Andre Dillard. So I get it. It's a fascinating kind of difference there when you're talking about the Will Campbell part of this. Ed on the text line says, people forget in Vrabel's first year he inherited a playoff team here. This Patriots team is a far cry from a playoff team. They'll be better, but we haven't seen Vrabel inherit a last-place team. So let's see what happens. And then it also says he thinks the Raiders will sneak up on teams this year. The Patriots part of this is interesting because I also look at their division, and Buffalo clearly is the best team. I have no idea what the Miami Dolphins are going to be. Absolutely none. Like, number one, is Tua going to stay healthy? Because if he doesn't, we've seen it. They're screwed.
The answer is likely no.
And if he does, like, even if he stays healthy, how good are they? Tyreek Hill is another year older. Jalen, I mean, I still love the Hill and Waddle combo there. And now they get NWI, so you know some more touchdowns are coming that way.
It's true.
But I still, even if they're healthy, I don't know how good the Dolphins are. I would assume that they're better than the Patriots if they're completely healthy. And then there's the Jets.
I think it's pretty safe to assume. And there's surprises every year in the NFL, but I would feel like it's a pretty safe bet to go Bills are going to win that division, Jets are going to finish last, and then some combination of Patriots and Dolphins in the middle.
I think that's fair.
Could be completely wrong because injuries and unexpected stuff happens all the time when we get to football season, but that feels pretty safe, which in most divisions, I don't know if you can make that kind of distinction of one team's going to finish first, one's going to finish last, and then the other two are going to be kind of on the wild card bubble.
Even the Titans division. Like, I feel pretty good about Houston winning it. All right?
Right. Me too.
2 through 4, you could tell me any combination of 2 through 4.
For sure.
And I would say, yeah, okay, I could see that. I mean, look, you know, if Cam Ward's really good, Could the Titans be in second in their division? Yeah, I think they could. Could the Titans also, who I think still have just clear big holes on their roster, could they be dead last again and we're talking about a 4-13 football team? Yep. Yeah, we could be talking about that too.
I think Corey Curtis said it best yesterday that out of those three, it's whoever gets the best quarterback play is probably going to be the team behind Houston, which I wouldn't guess that two AFC South teams are going to make the playoffs this year.
I wouldn't either.
But one of those three teams could end up 8-9. And I think it does depend on who gets the best quarterback play. Trevor Lawrence, is there more growth to be had for Trevor Lawrence now that he's got Brian Thomas Jr. in his second year and Travis Hunter? Who knows how much offense he's going to play, but he should be some sort of weapon for them. And then whatever's going on in Indy with Daniel Jones, I think I saw yesterday, taking a significant lead for the quarterback one position over Anthony Richardson, which has to make Indy fans feel great that Daniel Jones is going to start over their fourth overall pick from a few years back. So yep. It is about quarterback play. I think the rosters are all, you know, give or take a little bit on all three of them, but they're all kind of the same. It's going to be about whoever's quarterback either takes the first step in terms of Cam Ward or takes the next step for the other options there.
Ian, are you a believer in the Mike Vrabel-led Patriots this year?
You know, there will be an improvement. I do believe that. You know, how much? I will have to see about that. And there's plenty of, you know, instances where you go, I'd be surprised if they went worst to first in that division.
That's true.
Given where, you know, Buffalo. But I don't think, I do think they'll be better. I'm not buying any, like, playoff hype, I don't think, yet. No.
I'm trying to see, according to the odds, where they rank just to make the playoffs. So you've got in the AFC. So you got Buffalo and Baltimore, who are the two favorites in the AFC, and then Kansas City. So there's three right there. Cincinnati's fourth, which I think is debatable, but I get why they're fourth because of their quarterback. Houston is fifth. The Chargers are sixth. The Broncos are seventh. And then the Steelers are eighth. Patriots at ninth. So right now they're the ninth.
I think that's fair.
I think it's fair. Ninth in the AFC.
Yeah. There's always a team, you know, that
which
surprises.
Is in front of every other AFC South team, not named Houston, by the way.
So I would kind of be surprised if it were the Patriots, but there's always a team, you know, that sneaks in. Someone has a bad schedule, and that fits them as a last place schedule. You know, a quarterback who could maybe make a jump. Maybe McDaniels could be a good thing for him. That's one thing that he has that Vrabel did not have here. Well, I guess he did with Arthur Smith, and look how well they did. And it kind of went off the rails when they lost him. So maybe if he can get the OC solidified, someone who knows what they're doing, and he can be more of that hands-off and let them run that that room, maybe he can, you know, turn it around quicker than we think.
I mean, the one thing I would say on the McDaniels front is McDaniels sure looked like a really good OC when he had Tom Brady as his quarterback.
Yeah.
And then when he hasn't had Tom Brady as his quarterback, mm-hmm. it's been hit or miss. Like, you know, Mac Jones, there was some success there early on. And then for whatever reason, they just kind of nuked all that going. And then Bill Belichick, when McDaniels was gone, decided to basically make Matt Patricia the offensive coordinator, which not a very good decision.
Matt Patricia and Joe Judge.
Yeah, really good combo there.
Yeah, that's you know, Vrabel did the same thing when they lost Arthur Smith, kind of went through the whole Downing and then was it Kelly?
Yeah, it was all internal hires. He never made an outside hire at offensive coordinator after LaFleur left.
So, I don't know. Maybe if he can get the OC figured out, it might be key. Maybe McDaniels can turn it around. We'll see.
By the way, if you're wondering, there are two teams in the AFC that have worse playoff odds than the Tennessee Titans. Can you name them?
Browns.
That is correct. They are the worst odds in the league at plus 820.
Raiders?
No. The New York Jets.
Oh, right. Jets. Yeah.
The Raiders are just in front of the Titans.
Just in front.
Just in front of the Titans. Titans have plus, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, plus 440 to make the playoffs. And the Raiders are the team in front of them at plus 310.
I mean, there I hate to bring it up, but the AFC East could be up for grabs with one injury in Buffalo.
That's very true.
You know, like one bad injury in Buffalo, and you can't count on the Jets, you can't count on the Dolphins, and all of a sudden, It's anybody's
game.
It
is wide open.
All of a sudden, Vrabel's riding off into the sunset with a division championship in his first year.
Patriots are definitely not in that tier of Titans, Jets, Raiders, Browns, Jaguars. I'd put them right there with the Steelers and Dolphins.
But I do think their roster needs a lot of work.
I agree.
You know?
Particularly on offense.
You can't fix it in one offseason, as we learned last year.
They might have the quarterback long-term, so they think, but on offense, the rest of their skill stuff is not good.
We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Get back into the Predators in the 8 o'clock hour. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, who covers all things NFL, will be with us at 8:30 as well. All that coming up on the program. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I go to Starbucks. I go to Starbucks. I get a venti. Grab the pike. You know, so I'm doing that.
I don't know that I have especially pointy nipples.
Did you think people would melt down and react when you said asparagus like they did?
No, I ain't think they. Man, how I think I sound is regular to where I'm from.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
The hell with Lee Corso!
It hurts badder than whatever you can imagine. But the good thing is, losing's really not in my vocabulary.
Thielen, that's my guy, man. He swear he know exactly what I'm saying. Sometimes I can see it on his face. He have a look like, I don't know what you just said, but he still be like, oh, yeah, okay, okay.
That way you can have plenty of pockets for loose mitts. Just get you some cargo shorts. Did you offer Finebaum a mint?
I did not, but that's a
great
point.
Hey, Paul, I got something for you. It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant. And by the way, quick aside before I get going here, if there was ever a trade that a team in this city could make that would make me happy, bring me Xavier Leggett from the Carolina Panthers and put him on the Tennessee Titans.
Hey, Titans need some wide receiver help.
That was TD's guy 2 years ago.
Man, I love that guy.
Problem is Panthers have no wide receivers either, especially if they get rid of Leggett.
Bring me Xavier Leggett. Before he's done,
he'd fit right
in.
He
needs to be a Tennessee Titan at some point. And that's basically all our show will talk about at that point is Xavier Leggett.
Just play his
clips. That's my vow to you.
For 3 hours.
So we did not touch on this yesterday, but I feel like it's worth bringing up today. And it goes into a theme that I've talked about at different points the last couple of years, which is baseball umpires in particular are way too soft. And we saw it again on Sunday in the national championship game between Coastal Carolina and LSU. So Coastal Carolina head coach, for those who missed it, Kevin Schnall, and their first base coach, got kicked out of the game in the national championship series in the first inning. So when I first saw this, Jake, I thought, oh, God, like, what did he say? Like, he must have said something really bad. And then you go back and you watch kind of the replay of the exchange, and there's microphones now that have picked this up. So they started yelling about balls and strikes, which I understand by the letter of the law you're not supposed to do. It also happens about 75 times per game, and nobody ever makes a huge deal of it. You warn the coaches at some point, and then that's usually the end of it. So in a championship setting here, in the College World Series final, in the first inning, these two coaches get thrown out of the game, and you look back at the footage that's come out from the dugout, and Schnall, in the exchange with the broadcast, with the umpire, he says, quote, "You missed three pitches." That's what he said. You can see it. That's what he said. You missed three pitches. That's all he said. And he got thrown out of the game. And he went on this long diatribe about it. If you missed it after the game, I would encourage you to check it out. You know, he talked about it. It was kind of Mike Gundy vibes. He talked about being a grown man and being 48 years old and how he shouldn't be shooed away by another grown man. It was very entertaining. The follow-up press conference that he put out there. But I just could not believe that the umpire in this situation cannot recognize the surrounding that he's in and throws the coaches out in the national championship series in the first inning for saying you missed three pitches. Like, no profanity, nothing else. That's all he said. It's a huge problem in baseball. And it's become, as more people watch college baseball, I think that they're probably a little bit more sensitive to it than the major league umpires are. Although there are some major league umpires that do that really strive to make themselves the center of attention out there. I thought the inability to have a little bit of restraint and poise as an umpire here, which other referees in other sports have talked about, and you know, I bring up the NHL example a lot, but you know, I've talked with a lot of refs in the NHL that just know there's an understanding that emotions are running a little bit higher in the playoffs, and you have to have a little bit more slack involved with what you're willing to put up with if you're some of these referees. Again, I'm not advocating for it to just be open season on the umpires, but you got to say a little bit more than you missed three pitches, in my opinion, to be thrown out of the national championship game in the first inning. I'm sorry.
Yeah, got to have a little bit of feel for what's going on, and especially the first inning to toss him for that. And I get it. You watch the whole video, and he told him to go back to his dugout, warned both him and the first base coach, and they didn't go back, and then he tossed him. That's fine in a normal game. But again, this is an elimination game in the national championship. And Coastal, that ended up being the last game of their season. They lose, and LSU wins the title. It's tough. And if you haven't seen the video, I encourage you to watch it, if for no other reason than to see one of the other umpires trip over his own feet.
And then get embarrassed.
Do a somersault.
Yeah.
It was hilarious because it did look at first like Schnall might have kind of pushed him. But then you look at the replay and no, he just tumbled. And I believe Schnall said, "I'm not responsible for another man's lack of athleticism."
Yeah, it was
after
a great
game.
I mean, he did not hold back in his post-game press conference comments on that, which, look, I get it. Like, at some point, there's got to be some real accountability here on the umpires' front. They can't continue to just make themselves the center of attention. And for whatever reason, I just feel this is a huge problem in baseball. And, look, this is probably a conversation for another day because I know that the baseball purists out there get mad when people start talking about this. But, honestly, in 2025 – there's really no reason for an umpire behind the plate to be calling balls and strikes. We have the technology to call balls and strikes without the umpire. Again, that's a conversation for a different day, and I understand that there's the history of the game and all that stuff, but it's got to be better than it's been if this is going to continue.
I don't love the automatic ball strike system. They've experimented with this in AAA, but there is no reason the challenge system shouldn't be implemented. They used it in spring training. It was great. Everybody loved it, and they got rid of it. It better be in next year because all it does is make sure that the blatant misses are rectified.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's the umpires, I understand, you don't want to have just the computer calling all of them because there's going to be some really weird-looking strike calls when you do that of pitcher just completely misses his spot, but it clipped the edge of the zone and it's called a strike. I don't think that's the right idea, but the challenge system seems like a no-brainer. And it is across baseball, maybe more in college, but in the MLB, some of these umpires are just too soft, too. I think it was the Cubs a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Ian Happ just turned around and goes, "You're having a really bad day."
Yeah, I talked about that at the time.
Like, and he got tossed.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
I don't like how when they do get tossed, the umpire who has tossed the guy
just runs
just
away,
kind of walks away and stands there by himself. And the other umps have to come in, surround the player and the coach, and like buffer him away from the thing. And he's arguing and he's yelling. And the other ump's like, "Well, I don't know what he said. I don't know." It's like an excuse for him to like not get an explanation of what went down, other than the guy just lost his cool. You know, like, at least sit there and explain yourself and take the heat from the guy you just tossed and get it out of the way. Like, argue about it. Instead, the ump just walks away, starts writing it in his book. The other ump's like, "Well, I don't know what was said. I don't know." And, like, starts to, it's just like, you know, at least if you're going to toss the guy, sit there and take it.
I do miss the just complete unhinged
meltdowns.
Yeah, where they're screaming at each other.
Crawling on the ground and like acting like you're throwing the grenade.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I mean, Javi Baez, who we were just talking about, he had one a couple weeks ago where he had to be held back by the third base coach and one of his teammates. So I do miss those a little bit. Not that I'm encouraging guys getting in fights, but when the umpire and the manager are like an inch from each other's face,
it's
just screaming
awesome
at each other, it's a part of baseball. It's great.
Josh from Murfreesboro points this out on the text line, and I did see this the other day. C.B. Buckner, an umpire in Major League Baseball who's been around for a while, he missed 28 pitches behind the plate the other day. You know, they do the
28. The baseball the ump scorecards, that is one of the best accounts on Twitter.
Yes.
Because I will be watching a Tigers game or something like that and realizing how horrible of a day he's having. I'm like, I cannot wait to see this umpire scorecard tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it was – I think it was – was it the – it was the Reds and the Cardinals in St. Louis, and C.B. Buckner missed 28 ball strike calls behind the plate. 28's a pretty high number. Don't need to be missing 28.
I mean, you get, what, probably 250 pitches per game right around there.
Yeah, right around there. Yeah.
And so that means one out of every 10 pitches you're getting wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that may be a B-plus, A-minus on a test, but you're not looking for that. You got to be 97% plus to be an average umpire at the MLB level.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get back into the Predators and the NHL draft coming up next. And later in the program, we'll be joined by Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports talking all things Titans and NFL. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.